Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. Online and on KBIA, I'm Reuben Stern. It's been almost a year since a deadly EF5 tornado ripped through the heart of Joplin. The tornado wreaked havoc on the town just as it was celebrating high school graduation weekend. All told, 161 people would lose their lives in the disaster, and 8,500 homes, schools, and businesses would be destroyed. Despite the chaos, just hours after the tornado hit, the Joplin Globe newspaper began rolling its presses again, only 1 hour behind its regularly scheduled time. The Globe and its staff are the subject of a new documentary called Deadline in Disaster. The film is set to premiere this Thursday at the Missouri Theater in Columbia. The film shows how the newspaper staff covered the story of the community's recovery, but it also raises some interesting questions about any community in crisis. For example, when a disaster happens, what do people really want to know, and how do they get that information? Joining us in the studio to talk about the film and those other questions, first, Beth Pike is co-director of the film. She began covering the Joplin tornado recovery as a freelancer for CBS News. Welcome to the program, Beth Pike.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you in the studio. After a busy weekend for you, we'll talk a little more about that, okay. I guess, in a minute. Also joining us by phone is Wally Kennedy. He's been a staff writer for the Joplin Globe for more than 30 years, and he appears in the film. Welcome to our program, Wally Kennedy.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us by phone. We also have with us in the studio today, Zim Schwartz. She's going to help us understand the other side of a disaster in terms of the information and communication challenges inherent in that. Zim Schwartz is the City of Columbia's Director of Emergency Management. Welcome to our program, Zim Schwartz.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you in the studio with us. We hope to hear from you and our audience as well. If a large natural disaster were to strike this area, what information would you most want to know? Give us a call. Share your thoughts. Our phone number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And let's start with this question. Beth, what struck you most about the newspaper staff's effort in the wake of the tornado?
Well, I think what really struck me was that their desire to make sure they get to print and to get it right, get the story right, and not so much worry about their own concerns. One-third of the Joplin Globe lost their homes in the storm. Their graphic page designer was killed, and yet they didn't let that obstacle be in the way of getting the information out to the community. They knew they had an important role to play, and they delivered.
Wally, you were there, right, obviously?
That's correct.
Where were you when the tornado struck?
Well, I was at my home when the tornado struck, and I live on the south part of town, and I tried to get to the north end of town where the Globe offices are located, and the tornado had cut across the midsection of the town, and it was virtually impossible for somebody to go from the south side of Joplin to the north side of Joplin. And I felt the wind from the tornado, but I wasn't close enough to have any damage.
Mm-hmm. And so what did you do? I mean, you're a reporter. All of a sudden, this terrible thing has happened in your community. What was your first response?
Well, my first response, of course, was to try to get to the paper, and I couldn't do it. And when I got my first view of the damage here in Joplin, it was quite apparent that something terrible had happened. Of course, at the time, no one really knew the true extent. They couldn't get the big picture, and so what I did is I went to the west side of town and saw where St. John's Regional Medical Center had been taken a direct hit in the tornado, and I figured, well, we have one other hospital left. If there's going to be injured people, they're going to go to that hospital, and so I went to that hospital with just the intention of maybe getting some eyewitness accounts and you know, kind of getting an idea of the nature of the injuries. And there was over 600 people treated at the hospital that night. I was totally unprepared for, you know, what I was about to experience.
Right. And so what did you find when you showed up at the hospital?
Well, when I got there, there were about, 25 to 30 people there, and some of them were injured, some were non-injured, and then it just seemed like there was just floodgate was opened. You had people coming in ambulances, coming in the back end of pickup trucks by whatever means they could to get to an ER to get some sort of medical treatment. And the facility was totally overloaded. There were not enough blankets. There were not enough bottles of water. There were not enough wheelchairs. There were not enough places for people to sit down. The room became so congested that there was only a small little footpath from one door to another door in a relatively large emergency room. People were on the floor, people were on the ground, on stretchers outside. I've often said that it reminded me of that scene from Gone with the Wind in Atlanta, where the rail yard is filled with people laying out on the ground. It wasn't quite that bad, but there were a lot of people who needed help, and there was no place else to go.
Okay. I want to bring in a clip from the film from another one of the reporters who had just started reporting for the newspaper right around the time this happened. So he just shows up in town. This is reporter Josh Lettner, a reporter for the Joplin Globe. And I want to play this clip a little bit to give another reporter's experience of what they saw and what it was like for Josh Lettner here. So let's go ahead and roll that clip, and we'll talk a little more about it.
One of the first responders after the tornado said that, driving through neighborhoods, it looked like ants coming out of an anthill, people crawling out of the debris, so it was a rough way to cut your teeth to have to talk to people, when you have a minimum of experience in interviewing and then have to come into such a dramatic situation and talk to people who've had so much happen to them.
Okay, so again, that was Joplin Globe reporter Josh Lettner from the movie Deadline in Disaster, which is premiering this Thursday at the Missouri Theater. For those of you just joining us, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about keeping the community informed during a natural disaster, in particular the effort of the Joplin Globe newspaper during last year's tornado recovery. That effort is chronicled in a new documentary that is premiering this week. Joining me in the studio are filmmaker Beth Pike and Columbia's Director of Emergency Management, Zim Schwartz, and on the phone, we have Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. For those of you in our audience, if you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. If a natural disaster happened here, where might you turn for information and what might you hope to find out? You can share your thoughts by giving us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I want to go back to the clip that we just played for a second. Beth, you talked to Josh Lettner a lot as part of your process in making the film. What kind of variety of experiences? I mean, we have a veteran reporter who knew to go directly to the hospital. We have this other reporter who, just started his job. I mean, talk a little bit about the range of experiences that were involved in that disaster and getting information out.
Well, certainly. Well, this clip didn't particularly tell you, but you learned a little bit earlier in the film that Josh's first day on the job, right out of getting a degree in journalism and going to work, he showed up at Sunday night to go to work on Monday morning, and then the tornado hit. So literally his very first assignment, his first day in the job was this tornado. So you're talking about Wally, who's had many years of experience in the business, all the way to somebody who just got out of school. And I think that's typical of a lot of community newspapers, too. You have some of the young ones coming on, and you have some of the veterans showing them the way, like you do in a lot of other businesses as well, of course. So, yes, there was definitely a range of that we were able to capture in the film. And I think that was part of the interesting aspect to it all, was that we all go through these emotions, no matter how many years of experience we have at it.
Right. Now, Zim, he mentioned the emergency first responders being out there as well. And that's one of the things that I find really interesting is there are two sets of people out there on the ground after something like this happens, right? There's all the emergency responders who are trying to do their job to help the community. And then there are these journalists out there trying to figure out what's going on as well, right?
Yes.
and so how does that work? I mean, I imagine that may be great, and it may also be problematic.
It's kind of one of those love-hate relationships. I've worked with the media for close to 20 years now, and I'm originally from the law enforcement, so our background is always we don't want to talk to the media. But over the years, I've come to find out working with all of the journalism folks in Colombia, and we have a wide range, with a wide range of mm-hmm. experience, like you indicated, that they are, we must have them. They are our way of communicating with the public. And that's what's so important, and I believe they've both already mentioned that we've got to have the media to help us to get the word out. So I understand that, you know, people may not like the media there, but that is so very important to have them there and to have those such as Wally trying to be the seasoned veteran getting information out because he knows what to get out. And then those that are like, what? How do we help? And being so, we need the range of that. It's very, very important, and that's always the key to any type of disaster and emergency that we have, whether it be large or small, is communication.
Well, let's talk about that for a second in terms of the information that needs to get out. From your vantage point, Sam, and then we'll come to Wally and see what he says too. What do you consider to be the most important information that people need at a time like that?
It's very important that people know, number one, what has happened. I believe for them to know how serious it is. Are we talking about just a bad thunderstorm? Are we talking about a few homes that have been affected? Are we talking on the magnitude of Joplin? So I believe it's very important for the folks to know exactly what has happened and how bad it is. Now, what we started getting immediately, we attempted, I'm also the director of joint communications here, which is for our entire county, which is police, fire, and EMS. So we are the initial first responders for all these agencies. And what happened was we started getting flooded with phone calls about Joplin.
Really?
We knew. We were inundated. For the next week to 2 weeks, I was trying to deal with media here. I was trying to deal with the calls coming in where my folks were, the operators, telecommunicators. Because what happened was everyone knew something bad had happened. So everyone here, I have friends down there. I have family down there. I can't get a hold of anyone. How bad is it? Where can I send money? Where can I go to help? Can I volunteer? So all of that started flooding into us here, and look how far away we are.
Interesting.
So it was very interesting for me to see how we were affected here indirectly and how important it was for us to get information to get out to our community so they knew what was happening, how serious it was. Because we knew it was bad when we had heard Joplin was hit, and when we could not get them by way of our dispatch center, we knew it was very serious.
Interesting.
Very serious.
Of course, we had a lot of, I know our hospital field a lot of injured, and I'm sure you had officers. I know Missouri Task Force 1 was dispatched.
They immediately deployed.
So
as
we
well
were
as
definitely
our ambulance
involved.
Service. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, within hours, we had Task Force 1 being deployed from our area, as well as a full ambulance crew heading that way.
Right.
And then it was, stop, we need to know what we need, because Joplin, as everyone knows, was inundated with not only law enforcement officials, everyone wanting to help, volunteers who were affiliated, unaffiliated, and that becomes a nightmare as well when it's not coordinated properly. So it is interesting dynamic to look at it from the media's perspective, mm-hmm. from emergency management perspective, from law enforcement, from dispatch center. So it was That's what I believe is what needs to get out there quickly, is what has happened and the seriousness of it, and that people can just hang on for more information that will be forthcoming.
Yeah. Now, Wally, are there other things that you all at the newspaper viewed as critical to get out to the community during that time?
Well, essentially, the thing that we focused on was getting a complete report in the morning paper of what had happened the day before, what was going to happen that day, as much as possible that we knew of, and what we could expect down the road. So it was complete coverage of all of those elements that are important for people to know. You know, they want to know, how bad is it? What can I do to help? What are the problems? This is their community. They want to know what is happening in their community. And that was our focus, and even, frankly, a year later, we're still doing the same story. It is still the focus of the tornado as far as our coverage is concerned. And one of the interesting things that you noticed about how communities were affected outside of Joplin, this instance with Columbia, you know, how they were swamped with the caller area was swamped with calls of people asking about the situation. A friend of mine who lives in Kansas City, his daughter lives here in Joplin. When the tornado hit, he got in his car in Kansas City and started driving to Joplin because he knew it was serious. Well, on Highway 71, at that time, it was like a racetrack, I'm told. Cars going 70, not 70 miles an hour, but 90 miles an hour in mass, heading out of Kansas City to check on loved ones in Joplin. And you just visualize that for a second. And then you throw in all of these emergency response vehicles that are coming down Highway 71 to get to Joplin from the communities of Lamar. It's small little places that maybe have only one fire truck.
Amazing. They're and all of down. those responders just got on the road and started heading there, huh?
They just, it's volunteers, family people. I mean, it was just this. It would have been a sight to see, because apparently there were no highway patrolmen whatsoever, because they were all heading to Joplin, and everybody was going as fast as they possibly could to get to Joplin.
Yes.
It was a miracle there wasn't a horrible accident, from what I'm told. But, I mean, it must, you know, so that just shows how this thing affected way, 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 way beyond Joplin in terms of having an impact on the state of Missouri and this whole area.
Interesting. For those of you in our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about staying informed during a natural disaster and a new film that documents how the newspaper in Joplin responded after the tornado last year. Joining me in the studio are filmmaker Beth Pike and Columbia's Director of Emergency Management, Zim Schwartz. On the phone, we have Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. For those of you in our audience, what questions did you have when you first heard about the tornado in Joplin? Share your thoughts by giving us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Feel free to call in with questions for our panelists as well if you'd like to do that. Wally, what information was not available? What were some of the hard things to get that really the community could have used at that moment, but you just didn't have it as a newsroom?
Well, the information that was most important to get out to our readers were the victims, the casualties, who died, and being able to identify them. And because of the scope of this disaster, you eventually would end up with 161 people dead. They had to employ extraordinary measures where they really took everyone who was impacted by the tornado, ran them through a kind of a central morgue, and identified them through DNA to make sure they had positive identification on the people, and to, you know, literally kind of put people, the remains of people, back together so that they could be picked up by their families for a proper burial and service. There was a period there when all that process was going play on that we could not tell our readers what was happening. We couldn't tell them when their loved ones were going to be released, even though they knew that the family of a loved one was in the morgue. That was a very difficult time, very stressful. But ultimately, it was a couple of days where that lasted, and then it was over. The families were notified, and it was smooth sailing from that point forward. I think, all in all, we got very candid and full exposure to all of the information that was out there with regard to what was going on, with that exception. And, you know, and there are reasons of privacy involved there. And you've got to give these professionals in this type of business an opportunity to do their job and make sure it's done right. But that was the only thing that was really a problem.
Right. Now, Beth, you started out in Joplin representing mm-hmm. the national media
Correct.
Outlets, right?
Correct.
And what was that experience like, coming in as an outsider for the national
right.
media into this kind of a situation?
Well, mainly our focus, of course, was more, you know, sharing and showing the drama that unfolded in Joplin, because around the world they had heard about this massive tornado and they wanted to see it and hear the stories. So what was kind of unprecedented for me covering with the national press was, usually on tornadoes we show up for a day, maybe two max, and then it's over and done and we're on to other stories. With CBS, we stayed for 8 days straight, solid. We were reporting for the morning news, also for the evening news, and on the web. And, of course, the reason why we were there reporting on it was because the web hits were incredible, how many people were interested in seeing the story and hearing about it. And Wally could probably tell you, too, it was so many volunteers came in from around the world, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of that had to do with the media exposure. both the local and the national. And, of course, many people would tune into on the media. They could check out even the Joplin Globe for further details. I know some families in California said, yeah, we were hearing about it on the national news, and then we were also going on website, picking up your stories. We're also picking up what the Globe was saying. So clearly people very much cared about what happened in Joplin, and it really shows by the amount of volunteers over the course of the summer and the fall that have been coming in from just all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Wally, what was that like to have, you know, the story going on in your town become this national and even international thing?
Oh, it was. It was. I look back on those days, and it was just, it's amazing to us that we got a newspaper out because we had so many distractions going on. And many of the distractions involved talking to people at other newspapers, at TV stations. I took a phone call from a radio station in Scotland. I took a phone call from, I think, the equivalent of the National Public Radio in Australia. And it was strange because I get this radio interview, and the next day I get a couple of emails from people in Australia who had heard it and told me to keep a stiff upper lip, that things were going to get better there in Joplin. And it was all, it was just nonstop. Media inquiries, and we wanted to help our comrades in arms, so to speak, and help them get their stories. But it was at times a burden because we really couldn't devote to the task that we wanted to.
Right,
Zim, and then while all this is going on, we have a film crew in our newsroom doing a documentary about it. So, and then, you know, so just visualize that, you know, we have like a dozen people in our newsroom most of the time. Well, imagine about 50 people in the newsroom all the time, and film crews, and you know, it was wild. It was just unbelievable.
It's fascinating. I want to come back to that idea in a minute of the film crew following you around. But I want to, while we're here talking about this, I want to ask Zim about that information flow out to the public. I mean, you've done a lot of planning, I suppose, for these kinds of events. What's the plan in terms of balancing the responding to the incident and communicating with the public about the information of what's going on and what you're finding out in the response?
That's all part of our emergency operations plan that we have for Columbia Boone County. And all counties have some type of a plan in place. Ours happens to be 500 pages long. So if you're ever really bored,
a little hard to reference on deadline, though, right?
Yeah, it is. But it is basically who does what when an emergency does happen, whether it be a large or small scale. And a part of the plan is communication. There's a whole section of it. And it's interesting that while he was talking about everything going on, and that was in his world. Now take that in, it's happening in the law enforcement world, it's happening in the fire world, it's happening in the hospitals world, it's happening, all of that chaos that you're trying to control and get your hands around is happening in all these different disciplines. In the emergency management world down there, I know that there's a excellent emergency management down in Greene County. They have a great office and staff. They immediately responded to assist because you are overwhelmed. So everything that he was just describing is happening in all the disciplines, in the dispatch centers, in the surrounding dispatch centers, in the higher patrol, at State Emergency Management Agency, SEMA. So the key is communication, getting the word out, and we want the media to get the word out. But a fatal flaw from our side of things, if you will, if we have to say ours versus theirs, is that we don't ever want to give out bad information. So when we start giving out names of people who have died, we want to make sure we are accurate, mm-hmm. and that what we are giving out to the media, who can then further it on so that you can answer the other media outlets and the community, it is accurate. So it's so I know that some folks get frustrated with how much time it sometimes takes, but we simply don't want to put out bad information at any time. You always want to make sure that it's confirmed and accurate information and communicate that with the public.
And so, you know, I'm going to quiz you a little bit on the plan and not down to details because I obviously haven't read it.
I have it all memorized.
what can the people in Columbia and Boone County expect in terms of the communication from those responding agencies if something like this were to occur? What does the plan say is supposed to happen?
Well, what we have is it's called the Emergency Operations Plan. And we also have is what's called an EOC, Emergency Operations Center. And it depends on the magnitude. Obviously, an EF5 would be the worst type of disaster we can have. If we had some type of an energy disruption or something a little bit lesser, it depends on what the disaster or the natural disaster is or an emergency. And at that point, I get the make a decision on what and who is activated. So we have a partial activation up to a full activation. And so what happens in a full activation, such as what happened in Joplin, is we would activate all of the county and city officials who would come together to start working through this. And that's when all the different areas start getting formed, so to speak. So in this EOC, Emergency Operations Center, we have the JIC, there's lots of acronyms. We have the media portion, the relations. We have the resource area. We have the public, the responders, public safety responders. So we have all these different areas that are set up as part of the Emergency Operations Center to start working through where do we need folks. We have volunteers coming in. We need to set up a volunteer reception center to accept the volunteers coming in, to vet them, so to speak. What are your skills? Are you dressed appropriately? They had volunteers showing up down there in flip-flops. Well-meaning, but when you have that type of disaster, you've got to have the heavy work boots, you've got nails, you've got glass debris. So there's a lot of people that are well-meaning but don't have the information on how they should come to help with a disaster or where they should go, where the resources started pouring in. Now you have to manage those. The law enforcement had difficulty talking to each other. So the communication, the frequency of them talking. You had people saying, go over to 1st and 15th. There's no street signs. You know, so we had to start then getting maps and start saying, you know, so what we take for granted every day is gone. You know, cell towers are demolished. The communication is very limited. So using the media is very important. So there are different plans in place, so to speak, depending on what the emergency is here in Columbia Boone County.
Interesting. We have a caller on the line, Joyce from Columbia. Joyce, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thanks for joining the program and for calling in today.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a thanks to whoever kept the news on the air. I was in Brussels, Belgium. And thanks to the BBC, we were able to keep in touch with you. Don't know if that helped you while you were doing the work, but it was nice to be in touch. And also, when others said, you're from Missouri, well, they pronounce it differently, did you know about Joplin? And, yeah, and how far away is that? Did he get your house, et cetera? So it was some good information that came around the world.
Right. Another testament to sort of that international media picking up the story. Joyce, thanks for calling in today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Was that kind of the idea, Beth, for you and the people you were working for at the National Network of trying to make sure that this story got out in a big way, or was it just trying to make sure that it got on the air here?
Well, I would say since it's the national, obviously our audience is national, so we were wanting it to get out, you know, not just national, actually. So, I mean, that's obviously what they wanted to have happen. And it was interesting listening to the caller because I was working on another job about a month later, and it was with some Swiss film people who were coming into Columbia. And the first thing they said when they arrived was, how far are we from Joplin? Mm-hmm. First thing. Not anything about, like, how are we going to set up our production or anything. That was the first thing out of their mouth. And that was maybe 2 months after the storm had hit. So it was weighing on their minds as well.
Interesting. Okay, I want to remind everyone, once again, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about keeping the community informed during a natural disaster. We're also talking about a new film that documents how the newspaper in Joplin responded after the tornado last year. That film is premiering in Columbia this week. Joining me in the studio are filmmaker Beth Pike, who was a co-director of the film, and Columbia's director of emergency management, Zim Schwartz. We also have on the phone Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. We hope that you'll join our conversation after our break. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can share your thoughts or your questions for our panelists. We're going to take a short break right now, but we hope you'll stick around. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about keeping the community informed during a natural disaster, in particular the effort of the Joplin Globe newspaper during last year's tornado recovery, as chronicled in a new documentary premiering this week. Joining me in the studio are filmmaker Beth Pike and Columbia's Director of Emergency Management, Zim Schwartz. And on the phone we have Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. For those of you in our audience, how did the story of the Joplin tornado touch you and your life? Share your thoughts. You can give us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org or go online to our website, kbia.org, and follow the link for Intersection, and you'll find an online chat room where you can share your thoughts with us as well. Before the break, Wally mentioned sort of the chaos in the newsroom of not only, you know, this city in partial, mostly ruins at that point, and the reporting staff, many of them, as chronicled in the film, having their own challenges. And then there's this documentary film crew following them around. And there are several moments in the film where you see a reporter interviewing a member of the community, and the film crew is focusing on the reporter. So I wonder, what was that like for the people being interviewed to have all of this going on around them?
It was kind of a circus there at one point. It was like the media covering the media covering the media. Yes. Kind of like what we're doing today, I guess.
We've taken it to the next level here.
Next level. Actually, the Globe was really generous into allowing us in, you know, to hopefully we were not too invasive with them. I knew they had the job to do. And, of course, I didn't want them to be bothered by the cameras because then that takes away what they're doing and what we're trying to capture. So we kept that crew pretty small. It was usually just two of us or three of us that were, you know, around the Globe staffers and you know, sometimes had a little bit of a distance or, you know, we weren't trying to be right on top of them at all times. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting dealing with all that. And I think you build trust, and that's just what you do when you report on anything with your subject, whether it's the newspaper, a staff, or anyone else, is you build that trust that they know that they can trust you, what you're doing. And that takes a little bit of time. And then once that happens, it's kind of like, you know, the cameras, the notebooks kind of go away. They kind of accept you in that environment with them. And you're able to really capture some, you know, what is real. And that's what people want to see. So,
right. Wally, what was it like for you and your colleagues?
Well, it was totally out of our normal realm. Just the opposite of what we normally do. Someone is looking at us. Someone is talking to us, asking our opinions about things. We don't do that. We ask people questions, and we try to get to the truth of something. And, you know, I haven't seen this documentary yet, and I'm very anxious to. I'm going to be up there in Columbia on Thursday. And I'm just interested to see how it comes across. And I'm hopeful that if this shows that the people here at the newspaper or are ordinary people caught in an extraordinary moment, I think it will be just right on target. Because, you know, we're doing our job here. We do it every day. Tornadoes, we've had them before. So that's what I hope it shows. And that's what we are. We're just trying to get the job done and get our readers informed. And it is about trust, and trust with your readers. They trust you to tell them the truth, be it, you know, beautiful or brutal or whatever. And talking with Beth and doing this documentary, I maybe said some things I shouldn't have said, but at the time I said them, I'm sure I felt like I meant them. And I'm hoping that's the case. So,
mm-hmm. Has anyone at the newspaper seen the film yet?
No,
we offered. I always like for people to see it before I screen it by subjects. We offered, but I guess that goes back to the trust. Carol Stark, the editor, said, you know what? A lot of us just kind of want to see it on the big screen. We want to kind of experience that first time seeing it with other people. And so, I think that really touched my heart that they didn't feel like, you know. Okay,
no.
We're gonna. but I really think, Wally, you guys will be pleased, all of you guys did an extraordinary job, and I think people are gonna really recognize that who see the film. So,
I'm not worried. It's just one of those things where you, you know, you just don't know. And so until you see it and know it and experience it, then you can judge. But I'm totally confident it's going to be great. And what's important here, it's an historical account of something mm-hmm. associated with the tornado. And I think as time goes by, it's going to become very important. It's going to be a window back on a moment in our history that is going to be, it could well be extraordinary. And, you know, it could be a reference point for what's happened here for a long, long, long time.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. I want to bring him into the conversation. Phil from Lake of the Ozarks is with us. Phil, are you there?
I am here. I'm driving around the Lake of the Ozarks listening to your presentation. I'm coming from Columbia headed towards Monette today.
Great.
One of the things I think is important is a notification of whether or not the water is safe to drink during one of these events. And where the sewer services are still working.
Yeah.
Those are things that are important to know from a community point of perspective.
Right. It's a good question. Zim, how does that get assessed and how does that get communicated?
Well, that is excellent. I appreciate the call because part of that 500-page plan, one of the appendices or the annex, I should say, is Public Works. So Public Works is going to help come in and assess some of that. Then we have there's a whole annex. It's broken down to annexes, I have to tell you, law enforcement, fire. There's one on health. So part of health would be the drinking water. Is it safe? What has happened? So all of that is part of the plan. All those different areas come together to help. You know, it's not everyone thinks of police and fire and ambulance, and that is so true. But I tell you, the true backbone of a lot of these emergencies and disasters when you're trying to work through it is your public works folks. It's your planning inspection folks who are able to say, is the building safe? Is it structurally sound? So there's lots of different aspects of a plan when you have it in place, such as to address those issues the caller just asked about.
Mm-hmm. Wally, what was the situation in Joplin right afterward in terms of water and sewers and the things that Phil is asking about?
Well, Reuben, thanks for asking that question. And I had a hard time hearing what the caller asked.
Oh, the question is about the water and the sewers and how do people know what water is safe to drink and whether the sewers are still working and kind of those infrastructure questions that, you know, that people would legitimately need to know to keep moving on.
Well, that's one of the very first things we reported about after the tornado struck is that the situation with the water supply, the public, the municipal system was failing. And that they would have to boil their water or use bottled water. What happened, all of these residences, these structures, 8,500 of them, they literally created leaks when the houses and the buildings were blown away. And so you essentially had 8,500 leaks in a system, and they could not pump the water fast enough to keep the pressure up in the system. And just imagine how critical that was that night at Freeman Hospital when they were trying to take care of more than 500 patients, and they did not have adequate water pressure. They did not have computer communications. They didn't even have cell phone communications. But the water situation was critical, and it took them at least 2 to 3 days. And they did this in record time to stop all. It was like a death by a thousand cuts. They had to actually go and seal off every one of these leaks at these residences to get pressure back up, so the system would not be, a safe system. And it was one of the most early on, the most critical information we provided was what's happening to our water.
Right. Phil, I want to give you a chance to ask a follow-up if you wanted.
No, thank you. I'm pleased with Matthew's cell phone line, so thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate
okay. It. Yeah, thanks for calling in and being part of our conversation. You, too, can call in if you like to. Our phone number is 573-882-8925. Feel free to call in with your questions for our panelists, or if there's some way that the disaster communications from the Joplin tornado affected your life, we'd love to hear your story as well. So, again, our phone number, 573-882-8925. I wanted to ask about another thing. In the film, Wally, you were talking about the information and trying to figure out what to cover and what people wanted and the people there. There's a point in the film where one of the editors raises the question of, you know, are people going to perceive us as profiting off this tragedy? Mm-hmm. And I think it's the Sunday when, you know, there were stories mm-hmm. of all the people who had died put into yes. the newspaper. And one of the reporters is holding up a copy of the page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see all these pictures of people, which is, you know, an important part of what the newspaper did in terms of telling the story. But this question comes up, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, is there a perception of that having been a danger in this case, that people might have thought, oh, they're just coming in, these press vultures trying to make money Certainly. Off of what's going on here?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's always been the case. And I know for what the Globe, what their intent was, and I think it was something that was so important for the community, is that they needed to tell the story of those who died. They need to show that this was not just a small obit with all these names in here, but this is who these people are. Because it was a way that the community itself could mourn by reading about those that died, not just maybe a name, but knowing a little bit about them. And the Globe took the time. They had a reporter who spent a whole week talking to the victims' families. And so it was more of an expanded obituary. So you as a reader would know a little bit more about that person and the life that they had led up until that point. So for what that edition was, I think it was something that I'm sure has been saved in every single Joplin home since. That would be an edition you would not want to throw away because it really showed what was lost in the storm.
Mm-hmm. Wally, is that your sense, that people were more appreciative than suspicious?
No, I clearly believe that the readers of the Globe, they understand that we're a business. You know, that's we sell advertising. We do what we have to do to make a profit to stay in business. But to suggest that in that particular instance that we were, you know, somehow profiteering from the death of so many people. No, this was just another way for us, and our readers understood that, to communicate the loss. You know, these people are not numbers. They are people. And they had families. They had lives who touched other people. You know, we're not alone. These people are not alone in losing loved ones. We lost our coworker here at the Globe, and he's listed in this group. And it was an issue of respect, and being able to say, you know, these people need to be remembered. And I just don't. This is the only time I've really heard anything about that. From anyone in the community with regard to what's happened.
And I would echo that, Wally. I never heard anybody in the community, and when I would address myself who I was working for, like in those initial 8 days I was at CBS, really they were thankful that the world seemed to care, that the national press seemed to care and was sticking around and telling the story. So just personally, I know I did not hear anything negative about the press whatsoever, from city officials all the way to, you know, law enforcement and just the general public. I think they were appreciative that we were there to try to help tell the story and get the information out there that needed to be told.
And all the different angles I've heard from now, from all the different areas, because I'm kind of in the middle of everything, I didn't hear anything negative at all. It was personalizing what happened because it was so tragic. And again, a lot of folks in Missouri, a lot of folks across the country have family and friends there, and it's always you know, I know that person second or third hand because of that. So I think it helped. It really did help personalize the situation.
Okay, again, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about keeping the community informed during a natural disaster and a new film that documents how the newspaper in Joplin responded after the tornado last year. Joining me in the studio are filmmaker Beth Pike and Columbia's Director of Emergency Management, Zim Schwartz. And on the phone, we have Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. For those of you in our audience, feel free to join our conversation with your questions and comments. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I'd like to bring in another clip that kind of gets at what we've just been talking about. This is a clip from the film. Charles Davis, who is a professor at the MU School of Journalism, a panelist on KBIA's Views of the News, is quoted in the movie, and I want to go ahead and enter this clip from him, sort of talking about the same things that you've been saying here. So let's go ahead and roll the clip.
I think the Globe has done a fantastic job of personalizing what otherwise would be a lot of governance stories. They've done a good job of achieving a very difficult balance, I think, and that's the balance between hardcore, critical, skeptical coverage of the government response, of the aid, of FEMA, and they've done a really good job at that level while at the same time maintaining a really human touch with the people of Joplin. And I've read, as we've all read, just unbelievable human emotion. The personality profiles that came out of those stories are just amazing. And I think they're writing the history of their town after a really cataclysmic event.
Okay, so again, that was Charles Davis, MU professor. The bagpipes in the background were from some footage from a military event where they brought one of the flags from the 9/11 site to Joplin.
Yes, that was on September 11th, 2011. So this would have been several months after the storm hit. The 9/11 flag, which was a flag that had flown at the World Trade Center, it was blown in bits and pieces. And over the course of the last 10 years, different communities have been able to stitch back pieces to that flag. And a lot of that's been going to communities that have had disasters. There's been other communities that had been struck by tornadoes. And it's kind of one of those things where it helps everybody heal that have suffered a tragedy within their own community, and then being able to help, you know, stitch material onto the 9/11 flag. And the very last place for it to be stitched was Joplin, Missouri. Think how special that was. And so now it's going to be in the 9/11 Museum. And so the Joplin residents were the last ones to be able to stitch the flag back. And I saw some members of the Missouri Task Force who I had actually interviewed and done a short documentary when they had come back from 9/11. And I saw Doug, who was one of the leaders, Doug Westhoff, and it had been 10 years. And then I saw him down in Joplin, and it was clearly an emotional day for him to be down in Joplin, seeing that flag, and of course being with so many law enforcement people who had memories of it, and also were responding to Joplin tornadoes. So it was a really special, very moving day for all of us.
Right. Zim, I want to ask you something Charles said in there. You know, in addition to all of these human stories, he also mentioned sort of aggressive coverage of the response and the emergency management agencies, things like that. From your vantage point, what are some of the things that the media get wrong when they cover disaster situations like this?
I don't know if it's necessarily wrong, but as you can probably imagine, the media wants information. They want it now. And there, with everything going on, sometimes that's just simply not possible to stop everything that you're doing and trying to answer what they need. And you know, we try our best, but we're in the middle of trying to, you know, pull bodies or trying to help the EMS crews get someone into an ambulance. We don't always have the time to stop and do that. I think, and it was kind of ironic to hear Wally talk about how we were being focused on for once, and that's what we get all the time because the media is always there focusing on us, and so the tables are turned a little bit, and I kind of have to chuckle at that because that's how we are all the time. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that there are times when there's so much going on, it's so chaotic, and we're trying to do our job and talk to the media and get it right, as I mentioned before. That's very important. We don't ever want to give out misinformation that could damage someone or could harm someone or could make matters worse. So it just gets very hectic, and I know that working with the local media, they understand that, and a lot of what you said earlier about the trust is, you know, in this community, you build that over time. So I know that the law enforcement folks down in Joplin had that trust with media. Now you have the outside folks coming in, which we don't always know. So that's a challenge. But the local media, they know, they work well with. So that was one of the things that the chief of Joplin actually said during a presentation was, we wanted to work with our local media because we knew them. We trusted them. They knew when we said, hang on a second, we'll get back to you, that we would.
Right.
It's just very chaotic, and I know most of the media does understand that.
And are there ever things that you think, oh, if those reporters would just ask me this thing, I could tell them all kinds of interesting stuff, but they never ask?
Well, you know, the local media, I don't know about Joplin. I'm not as familiar with the media down there, but a lot of our local media will ask me all the time. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there anything else that we haven't asked you and that you think is important? I mean, almost 100% of the time they do that. Just today I did another interview about the flooding that's going on right now. And is there anything else you want to get? Yes, I do. When there's barricades up, please don't go around them. It's things like that. So there's always an opportunity to tell you more. Just because the media doesn't ask doesn't mean that we can't get our message out across and still say it. So,
but there aren't necessarily sort of thematic things that they always forget to ask about. That, if they just knew from this side.
No, not the media is usually pretty darn thorough. on what they ask and when they're covering, because they are trying to do the best they can. And I understand that now. In the old days, it used to not be. That's not the attitude of law enforcement towards media. But over the years, it has changed. Yeah. And we understand it's important from the emergency management perspective now. It's very important to talk with the media and tell them the message you want to get out there. So if they don't ask something, make sure they know.
And I think, too, having a spokesperson who is going to handle the media questions and who know how to assist and,
yes.
and get back, because that doesn't always happen in certain cases where whoever, maybe they're overwhelmed or whatever, the spokesperson. But, you know, it's so important that they stay in touch with the media and do return, because they are mm-hmm. working on deadlines and so forth. So I think
that's – And we understand that.
Right.
And it's just so mm-hmm. important also to have someone on our end, if you mm-hmm. will, being comfortable.
Yes.
There are some people that you never want to put in front of the camera, because the poor media person will never get any information.
Yeah.
But if you have someone who's comfortable mm-hmm. and can say, I can't answer that right now, or here's what I can give you, that is very key on our end of things while we are working with the media. It's
right.
very important to have the appropriate spokesperson, especially in a disaster this large.
Yeah. And Wally, would you say that was working during the stuff going on in Joplin?
Yes. Well, because I'm established here, I knew all the players. And so, and they knew me, and I could talk to them via cell phone, by telephone, in person. So access was not difficult. The city of Joplin made a wise choice by staging a news conference every day, usually around 3 o'clock, with the most up-to-date information available that we could then share with our readers, and we would do so immediately via an online presence, and then through social media, and then it was. I don't think I really had any difficulty other than the part where we were trying to identify the victims. Other than that, I had pretty much a clear access to everything I needed to know, and whatever question I asked, if they couldn't answer it, they would give me some explanation for why. And so I feel pretty good about that. Then I've got one question for you. Have you done anything different up there in Columbia now in response to the Joplin tornado?
We have, yes. Communication is a big one. Obviously, social media these days, as I have heard repeatedly with Twitter, Facebook, that is very important. And as you can probably guess, city governments are a little slow to get up to speed. And that is one of the big things that has changed is we are Facebook and Twitter now. We had several meetings up here in Columbia because a lot of folks are saying, I can't wait for a press release any longer. I can't wait for you to call me back. Can you put something out so we can have it immediately? So that is, Mr. Kennedy, that is one of the things we looked at, is how are we getting the information out there as quickly and appropriately as we can. So also the emergency operations plan that I mentioned, of course, every county has one. It's updated yearly. I'm updating it all the time. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, before Joplin, we were even looking at the mass casualty part of our health and medical portion. What do we do with a large number of deceased? We have a family assistance center. We have a draft of what we are going to do here, so similar to what Joplin had in place. Of course, that was a very large magnitude. But several things such as that. What do we do with pets?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, people.
And there's
are very
a bit of
attached.
That in the film,
yes.
actually.
Well,
about what
that's
happened
interesting.
In Joplin.
I haven't seen it mm-hmm. yet, but those little details, if you will, have to be thought of and planned and prepared for. So, Wally, to answer your question, we looked at several areas of our emergency operations plan, updated those, new drafts, talked to people. Lots of meetings, and that's a portion of my job.
What about a cell phone alert system like the university has instituted? Is that something that's being considered?
Well, we do have in place right now is what's called NICSL. And it is a free service you can sign up for, and you can get text messages and warnings. So right now, if everyone's going to nixle.com, please feel free to.
Could you spell that?
Nixle.com, and you can get free alerts. Now, you can pick different agencies that you want alerts from. Obviously, from Joint Communications and Emergency Management, we send out roadway closures. If we've had a bad accident on I-70 and it's closed and traffic is backed up, all the way to there are flooding in this area, to we have a tornado warning and watch. So we send those type of messages out. So if you are hooked up to Nixle, you will get those via your email or your phone, however you register. It is free. So that's one way that we have tried to get information out there. The City of Columbia participates in Nixle, and anyone can sign up for it.
Are people taking advantage of that
program? Yes, they have been. And there's a long story behind Nixle, but it was free, and then they wanted to charge, and now it's free again for governments. So we have chosen to continue that and continue to get the message out for all. So I encourage anyone to sign up for that. It is free, and you don't have to do anything else but sign up. And you can get, for example, we sent out several today about the flooding. We sent out when we had severe thunderstorms coming through the last few days. We send out anytime there's a tornado warning or watch. So we send that information out in a timely manner. And that's from the Joint Communications Center here in the county.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Wally, I wonder if you could give us just a real quick update on where things stand in Joplin now.
The progress that has taken place here has just been phenomenal. A large percentage of our major businesses are back. We lost a Walmart, we lost a Home Depot, we lost Academy Sports, Pizza Hut, Walgreens, Chick-fil-A. I can just go down a list of businesses. Well, they're all back. We've got more that are planning to come back. The housing situation is a little bit on the slow side, but it really looks to me like it's picking up steam now. And there's an enormous amount of volunteer work here. And before I let you go, before we cut this thing off, I just want to say one thing to the readers out there, your listeners out there. I hope they, when they hear a storm siren, that they think about the Joplin tornado, because I think in Joplin, people are used to tornadoes that are, 100 miles per hour, maybe 100 yards wide, football field wide. They don't think in terms of an F5 tornado in the F5. They do now. And that's what the folks there in Columbia and everywhere else should be thinking when they hear a tornado siren. Could this be a Joplin tornado? Could this be a tornado that's 3/4 of a mile wide and wind speeds of 200 miles an hour that devastates 6 square miles? Of an urban area. That's what they need to be thinking about when they hear a tornado siren.
Wow. And that's probably a good reminder for us to end the program on. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us today, Beth Pike, filmmaker, City of Columbia Director of Emergency Management, Zim Schwartz, who probably appreciated that message from Wally
there. Yes, very much so.
And on the phone, you heard Wally Kennedy, a longtime reporter for the Joplin Globe. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of the program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Leah Becerra. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. I'd like to thank you for joining us. Have a great week.